Buzz, this is Sunday Night Gold. Coming up in just a few short minutes, the Professor L. Roy Board III, a.k.a. Professor Pop Culture, will be joining us, along with the Jazzy Diva and yours truly, W.B. Come on. Man. This thing just smokes. Mine is exquisite. That's simply cold-blooded. Hey, welcome to 1-2 Sunday Night Gold. Yours truly, WB and the Jazzy Diva. Coming up, our special guest, Mr. Elroy Boyd III, a.k.a. Professor Pop Culture. Featured tonight, hey, his brand new book. Yeah, let's get a clear picture of that. Superfly Trilogy. Just waiting for my co-host, the Jazzy Diva, to join us. This will be a night of fun. Information. Education. So kick back, grab a glass. This is Peter White. Just my imagination. Come on. The Jazzy Diva. Hey, I'm WB. And you can see if you're looking on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. And you'll also be able to hear the Professor Pop Culture coming up. We're going to kick this off right after this and tie this in to the theme. of tonight's broadcast. This is Curtis Mayfield. We, the people who are darker than blue.
We people.
What a way to kick this off, huh?
Darker than blue.
Come on.
Are we gonna stand around this town and let what others say come true?
Yeah.
We're just good for nothing. They all figure. A boyish grown-up shiftless jigger. Now we can't hardly stand for that. Or is that really where it's at?
It's under, Professor.
We people.
It's under Studio W underscore Buzz. Studio W underscore Buzz. That's the fan page. They can watch it. I'll send it to you.
On Facebook?
Yes.
If your mind could really see, you'd know your color is same as me.
Come on.
Thank you.
Pardon me, brother, as you stand in your glory. I know you won't mind.
Or one of the apps.
The whole story.
Or website. Come on.
They can watch it on the website.
No. They can only hear audio on the website and apps. Video, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook.
And what page on Facebook?
Facebook Studio W underscore Buzz.
Uh-oh, okay. To watch.
To watch live. The Jazzy Diva's in the house. Hey! Underscore Buzz. The app. Studio W. If you have Android. Apple. Studio.w.
Learn to know your sign. Shall we commit our own genocide?
Alexa.
I know we've all got problems. That's why I'm here to say, keep peace with me and I with you. Let me love in my own way.
I said, we. We the people. Darker. Who are darker than blue? Come on.
Even better yet, but there's the joker in the street, loving one brother and killing the other.
When the time comes and we are really free, there'll be no brothers left, you see. We people who are darker than blue, don't let us hang around this town and let whatever say come true. We're just good for nothing, they all figure. A boy's grown up shiftless jigger. Now we can't hardly stand for that. Or is that really where it's at?
Wow, wow.
Pardon me, brother, while you stand in your glory. I know you won't mind if I tell the whole story. Pardon me, brother, I know we've come a long, long way, but let us not be so satisfied, for tomorrow can be an even brighter day.
Welcome, everyone, to Sunday Night Gold. I'm your host, WB, along with my co-host, the Jazzy Diva. Hey, Jazz.
Hey, hey, hey.
Okay. Turn your camera on.
Yeah, I'm coming.
We had to see you.
In the middle of other stuff.
I know.
Multitasking, you know.
Yeah, I understand. And because you sacrifice, because of the importance of our guest tonight, Mr. L. Roy Board III, a.k.a. Professor Pop Culture, I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it is to have you here. He's also former co-host on Monday Night Madness, which he served gracefully, loyally. Mm-hmm. And just extremely, extremely just great in what he does, because mm-hmm. he brings on the information because he does his research, and then he brings it, and then he brings it with a passion. Welcome, my dear friend.
My friend, my beautiful friends, I cannot tell you
man
how wonderful it is to be back.
I told you. Look, you said I'm going to have to leave. I said no. No, you're not leaving. Okay. Yeah. You're taking a hiatus for a while to do some other things, but you always have a platform here. Always.
It's so wonderful to know, and I appreciate that greatly. Thank you. Jazz, he told me, this is Studio W is like the mafia. You really don't ever leave.
You don't leave.
No.
You don't leave.
No. No.
No, you don't.
Because I have names and I have addresses, you know.
Okie dokie.
Wait. I'm telling you up front. Okay, nothing's hidden here. So tonight's, the reason why the professor is on tonight is because he has a brand new book. And nobody can tell your story better than you can. The name of the book, the title of the book, the inspiration behind the book, and what's it all about?
You're asking me.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That is a question.
The name of the book is The Superfly Trilogy. Why is it called The Superfly Trilogy? Because this is my first book on film criticism.
Whoa.
In which I am taking the three Superfly films and I'm giving them a critical academic analysis of each of them. Wow. And how it came about, man, there's so many. Okay. So we're talking about 17 years, several different things that occurred that culminated in the formation of this book. The first thing was, about 17 years ago, I taught a class at a local institution here in town, mm-hmm. and the class was on black film mm-hmm. with the high concentration on Soul Cinema. And when it got to Superfly, you know, I would, when the film was over, there would be great discussion. Oh my God, very heavy discussion. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them about the two subsequent sequels. And the thing about it was the students were shocked. They were like, God, there's more? You know, like this story, one film was not enough. They had to make more. Okay. Mm-hmm. So wow. I found that interesting. And then in 2018 on Facebook, I saw the trailer for the remake and I thought, okay, so this is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I went to see the film and was further intrigued mm-hmm. by the remake production. So, knowing full well that in about another 4 years at that time, it was going to be the 50th anniversary of the film. So, I was just starting research on my next book after Bless His Soul. And the second book was going to be on a internationally known icon who was also a film auteur. And I'm still kind of keeping that under wraps because I'm still going to do that book. Okay. And when I saw Superfly, I was like, hold on. So I decided I have to put that on the back burner and concentrate on Superfly. And then last year, I was very fortunate to attend the 19th annual Gordon Parks Conference in his hometown of Fort Scott, Kansas. And at the very last minute the conference ends on a Saturday night with this gala dinner in which awards are given out to prestigious luminaries. And at the last minute, I was asked to interview David Parks, the son of Gordon Parks, the brother of the film's director, Gordon Parks Jr., on the 50th anniversary of Superfly. And then that just went so good. And it was such a great interview. Man. It was really kind of a kick in the pants for me. I got to finish this. I got to finish this pronto. So here we are.
We
apologize, but.
Hey, everything has a time. And you and I, you've been talking about this for a while. Mm-hmm. You and I, and I'm sure you discuss this with Jazz. And I am so excited to have you on tonight. I'm bubbling because this is such a great project. I saw the original film and I was thinking, I saw it when it first came out.
Okay.
And I'm, wow. And then Curtis Mayfield got a question and then Jazz. Please chime in after this.
I got you.
When a writer or producer, whoever is in charge of, producing a film, first of all, you have to have a subject, topic, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take this Superfly. Then can you tell me, I'm thinking that the idea came before the music, or did the music?
Definitely. Definitely.
Whoa!
Man, this story, its origins go back to 1932 in Cleveland, Ohio. Okay?
This is deep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Wow. So. Jazz?
I can't divulge too much.
I can't hog the conversation, Jazz.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I've heard Professor Pop Culture talk about this for a long time, and I have my questions handy. Give me a second. Because I have my questions because, I have questions.
You know, I do too.
Yeah. And while she's getting those, can I tell the both of you,
please,
thank you so much for having me on. It means so much, greatly. I so appreciate this. You will never know. So thank you. And did we lose the Jazzy one?
Yes, she'll be back. Don't worry, she'll be back. But so in the meantime, why don't we do this?
Okay.
Why don't we drop a few jams from, I have the original soundtrack.
Yes.
Okay. Can we do that?
Here we go.
Can we?
Is
that okay? Professor, you know. You know how I do it, bro.
I don't play.
Professor Pop Culture. The Super Fly Trilogy. Come on, man. It gets gooder and gooder. Come on. pusher, man. You're listening to Sunday Night Gold, WB and the Jazzy One. Wow. You know, that is too deep. Welcome back to Sunday Night Gold. Professor.
Yes, sir.
Those last two songs I played, Little Child Running Wild and The Pusher Man.
Yeah.
How were you able to, your message throughout your book, what were you trying to point out? I really want to know the message that you were trying to point out in your book. What were you trying to get the audience to understand?
Generally, all the way through, or just having to do with those two songs?
Well, you take it any way you want.
What I was pointing out is simply this, that these three films, I am opening up to not just a new generation, but even the generation that was a part of those films. And to also bring about sort of, I don't want to say a hidden history, but a history that was not very well known. Superfly TNT, which was the first sequel that came out in 1973, not even a year after its predecessor, was a major bomb. Mm. In fact, WB, you are a native of Richmond. Do you remember the old movie theater on Broad Street downtown called the Town Theater?
I do not.
Okay. I believe the National Theater is there now on Broad Street. But anyway, I spoke to a former old school Richmond DJ. I had a telephone interview with him. He remembered the first week of the run of Superfly TNT, and the theater was packed. Because you see, at that time, everyone was expecting a success just like the first one. He said it was so bad that within the first 30 minutes, everyone walked out.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. And what is this about? This is greed from the producers and high expectations with the studios and the filmmakers. And also, Superfly dealt with a tremendous amount of backlash from the civil rights movement upon the time of its release.
Okay.
So here's Ooh. Something that a lot of people don't know. This is sort of new knowledge, was that Sig Short, the film's producer, and Ron O'Neill, they wanted to provide a new Superfly film in order for the civil rights organizations to be appeased by their effort. Because, I mean, they were picketing. The premiere was picketed. Major cities all over Chicago, Boston. Boston... Ron O'Neill pointed out in the summer of, in the autumn of 1972, Boston sold out in 3 weeks. And so if Boston sold out in 3 weeks, there had to be some white people involved.
Had to be.
Yeah.
You know, there you go. And also for the Gen Z generation who did not, find the 2018 film appealing, my thing is, I state several reasons for that, but also I do believe that in the years to come, we'll look back on it and we'll begin to get it.
Right.
And we'll appreciate that later.
Well, you know, I saw it, not on Broad Street, but on Second Street, correct me if I'm wrong, there was a movie theater called the Hippodrome.
Yeah.
And I believe that's where I saw it when it first came.
Oh, you saw it at the Hippodrome. Interesting. Okay.
That's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not saying that it wasn't aired on Broad Street, whatever it was.
Yeah,
it was Second Street.
No, I got you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was at the Hippodrome, a theater. But this was so amazing, Jazz, is this movie it reflects on a lot of things.
So
not only that was happening back then, but it's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the importance of your book, Professor, is that I hope that millions of people will see your dedication and the story that it tells. And also, it may educate them in a way that they can change their perspective in a more positive way about what the plight is all about.
Oh, man. You hit it. You hit it. The plight is right. I even have excerpts of young street people who went and got in the game because of the influence of the film, but then got out of it because they realized that it's not worth it. They saw what Priest saw. Okay. Oh. And Priest, from the very first frame that we see him, he made his decision that he was getting out. And then a lot of us in the populace, we seem to have forgotten that, and we just wanted to just condemn the film and just shame it, bad, bad, bad. You're depicting African Americans as drug dealers, this, that, and the other. But it is a verisimilitude. And you're also talking about plight.
Brother?
May we also make clear that this film was released at the time, at the height of Nixon's war on drugs.
Man.
All of that war on drugs, which was really the byproduct of Johnson's war on poverty. Oh, man. So that's in chapter 2. Man.
So short of coming out of the gate with it.
Yeah.
Jazz.
Yes. My question is, talk about the person, Ron O'Neill, a little bit. Cause I just thought he was fine as frog hair. You know, I just thought he was just fine. Just a good looking, not, you know, and talk to us about him.
Ron O'Neill, was born in Utica, New York in, 1937. His father was a jazz musician, but the career did not go very far. And he was forced to take on a job at a defense plant in Cleveland, Ohio. So the family moved to Cleveland, Ohio. He had two older siblings. He had a brother and a sister. And his father passed away while he was growing up. It was really a sad story. Then he had a brother who was killed, and then the sister was killed by the hand of her husband. So all of these rash of deaths put him in a very, very low place. Now, he really did not know what he wanted to do with his life, but he was able to get a scholarship, and he did attend the Ohio State University at the age of 20.
Okay.
And he didn't stay very long. I think he flunked out within the first year. He really thought that he was going to be a loser at one point, and was just going.
This
to
is Ron O'Neill we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and just
knock around Cleveland in a rash of dead end jobs. Seriously, then a friend of his invited him. Okay, now Renee knows where I'm going with this. A friend of him invited him to see a play at the Karamu Playhouse,
in really,
Cleveland, Ohio.
Really,
and he went to see this play,
man.
And he just sort of just floated on air. He realized that is what I want to do.
Wow.
So he talked to the people afterwards about how can he be a part. They told him to come to an audition a few days later.
Mm-hmm.
And instantly he was cast in the chorus of the Pajama Game. So it was backing roles, chorus parts, and graduating to supporting roles, okay, and such, and then to starring roles. In fact, when the Black Theater Network Conference was in Cleveland, about what, 19 years ago, Renee, we went.
Yeah, about 19, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yes. We toured, Karamu,
we did. House.
And you, if you ever take the tour, William, you will find on display the old photos of O'Neill as a young man. Okay. Mm. Because he is really part of the legacy and the history of that theater. It's really, really something. And so then what he and his, pal, Al Fan, who was his mentor, they would paint houses during the day and rehearse and perform at night.
You told me about this before. Somehow, okay. Over the last 4 years, somehow that resonates with me.
Wow.
I don't know how. I really don't know how.
Okay.
I've heard this before from you, Professor.
Wow.
Okay. Four years. Well, guess what? It shouldn't be surprising because when you were on with me on Monday Night Madness, I learned so much. We had so much fun. So much fun, my friend.
We did. We really did.
And that story resonates with me.
Okay.
Okay. And it's good. That tells me my mind is still working.
Oh, it's still strong. So then from there, Al Fan gets a call that from New York that someone needs to teach acting classes in Harlem. And he knew the person and he fixed it up. And so Ron was able to teach acting classes and he was going to make it as a working actor. Okay.
Wow.
Well, in Harlem, there was a race riot the time that his Greyhound bus got there. Okay. Mm. In 1969. So he was already in the middle of some turmoil, you know, as soon as he got there. And he gets casted in No Place to Be Somebody, Ceremonies, right? And Dark Old Men. He is in that golden age of black theater. Okay. Man. And then William wins the Obie Award for his role in No Place to Be Somebody.
Be Somebody. Charles Goodnight. Okay. Yes.
Gets cast very, very small roles in the film Move, with Elliot Gould, and The Organization, which is a sequel, which is an In the Heat of the Night sequel following They Call Me Mr. Tibbs. Okay.
Oh!
Okay. Now, get a load of this. And this is connected to a recent current event that occurred a couple weeks ago. In the fall of the early winter of 1970, he hears through the grapevine in New York City that Gordon Parks Sr. is directing a new film. Now, in black circles, Gordon Parks was the big thing because he recently released The Learning Tree. Okay, we're still in the height of the civil rights movement, counterculture, so his photographs of that movement resonate highly. So this was of interest to him. And he was told that this is a movie about a private eye, but an unorthodox private eye, okay?
Hmm.
So he goes in to read for it. Few days later, he's on the phone and he's told that, well, you were considered,
but
you were too light for the character.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
yep.
No, stop. Please. Forgive me. Did I hear what I thought I heard?
Yes. And you know, so I'm going to say something.
Man.
When we see how Shaft turned out, come on, William.
Come on.
Don't you think? Roundtree is the one. Okay. Come on.
Bro.
But listen.
I got a question for you. When are you going to write that book? Okay. What are you?
Just pause when you say Richard Roundtree.
Oh, jeez.
Woo! Let's pause. Okay. Tamo. Can we do this one right now and come back with more? This is so intriguing.
It is.
Look,
we might, professor, my dear friend.
I can finish.
No, I don't want you to finish. We might have to have a part two.
And I need an off-camera moment. You said
this about.
I need a
Sunday night go with the Jazzy Diva.
Yeah.
Hey, that's you, right? And it's only one Professor Pop Culture, my friend.
It'll be all right.
That's what I say. Let the man rap a plan, said he'd send him home. But his hope wasn't right, and he should have known. It's hard to understand. There was love in this man. I'm sure all would agree that his misery was this woman and things. Now Freddy's dead. That's what I say. Everybody's misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another junket plan, pushing dope for the man. A terrible blow, but that's how it goes. Freddy's on the corner now. If you wanna be a junkie, wow. Remember Freddy's dead. We're all built up with progress, but sometimes I must confess, we can deal with rockets and dreams, but reality, what does it mean? Ain't nothing said, 'cause Freddy's dead. Slay it.
just think of Fredo. Everybody's misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another junkie plan, pushing dope for the man. A Fred is on the corner now. If you want to be a junkie, why? Remember, Fred is dead.
I think you knew this character. Mad Mike. Mike Ward is listening.
Here we go.
Jazz, you know him too.
I know. What is Mad Michael playing? What is Michael up to?
Michael.
She is something stupid.
What did he say? What is Michael up to?
Does the professor approve of who Freddy is?
Does the professor approve of what?
Who Freddy is. You know...
Proof. Freddy is a character from from the film.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Professor, and I'm surprised you even answered this dumbass question.
No. I have to say this. And Jazzy and I know because we've studied dramatic theory.
Oh.
Freddy